a little stalk.
Basol, take one.
It's a big old fat motherfucker called
Blizzing Buzzard Buttocks.
Big Rigger Inspection Spatial.
Under my feet.
Look, the biggest heavy band of all time.
I wouldn't ask you to do a drum roll if your arm fell off.
There was an incident with the pyrotechnics.
And Kirk!
Squillions of dollars and squillions of people.
How the fuck are you, Lars?
Piddly wants and wills needs.
Lars Ulrich, drums and bongs.
What the fuck does that mean anyway?
I hate that fucking camera, man.
Well, since we started.
I'm talking about like a fucking live gig. You see this for, right?
What really gets my dick hard?
Mommy, where's Fluffy?
Howdy, hi, friends and neighbors. Jason Newsted here, listening to And Podcast for All. Bitches!
Welcome back to the Podcast for All. I'm Shane Obershaw.
I'm Jeff Winslow.
No water, no snacks, no food tonight. All I'm rocking, the pink Trident bubblegum.
I remember the pink Trident bubblegum. I liked bubblegum when I was a kid. I liked all gum.
How about Bazooka with the comics?
Hell yeah. The best part is that you get it. You'd look at the comic. Of course, the gum would be hard as a rock.
Yep.
You'd bust your teeth, and then it'd finally soften up. You'd chew it. You get this burst of sugary flavor for about 8.5 seconds. And then it would just basically fall apart and turn to paste in your mouth, and you'd spit it out.
As soon as the taste was gone, I was like, well, now I'm going to use the comic to spit this out and put another one in.
I remember I chewed a piece way too long when I was a kid, and it like turned into the consistency if like you could imagine putting paper in too much water or like just chewing on some paper and just
right.
Crumples apart. That's like what the gum did. Maybe it was expired or something. I don't know, but it literally like started just like, it looked like fucking kinetic sand.
Just disintegrating. How'd that go again? I forgot about how hard some of that shit was. You'd open that up. It was like terrible. Chewing through fucking concrete. Like you had rocks in your mouth.
It was terrible, but life altering because it's something you never forget.
No. The weird thing is this Trident bubblegum, that's the pink package. It's just simply Trident pink bubblegum.
It's just classic bubblegum.
It's getting hard to find these days, and I don't know why.
Maybe it's offensive. Who knows?
Oh, the color pink. How dare you guys?
Or maybe it's offensive to people who can't blow bubbles. No bubblegum. How dare you?
Can't
or what about those
gum.
What about those people who have to live in a bubble because they have like, you know, autoimmune deficiencies and breathing in some fresh air could make them sick, you know?
Bubble Jeff, gum how dare you go there? Jeez.
Could be offensive. I'm just kidding. We're talking about bubble gum.
Tone it down a bit. Last week we were talking about our mother was a witch and she was burned alive, and now you're saying the words bubble gum? Jesus.
I know. I'm a loner, Dottie, a rebel.
What's up, dude? Season 11, episode 4. I had fun last week with the Cliff'em notes.
The Cliff'em notes. It was fun.
It wasn't fun. I seriously had a good time. I think
I did too.
You and I. It's funny how we have some similar opinions and some just absolute different planet opinions. Makes for a hell of a good chat. A lot of good laughs last week and really fun to edit.
Well, we want to keep it easy, keep the train rolling. Speaking of the train, do we have any hate train, or have people been nice to us lately?
People have been nice. I'm glad you brought that up. I want to say one thing about impodcastforall@gmail.com.
Right in.
I've got something to say. Does that sound familiar?
Never heard it.
I
got something to say.
I checked your mailbox today.
My mailbox? My mailbox is cold.
Our mailbox. All I want to say about the mail, no hate train this week. All good.
You've lots got mail.
Oh, the memories.
Goodbye.
All I want to say is the emails that we get in our inbox, some weeks I feel really bad because we cannot get back to all of you with a proper response. There's just, it's just, there's so much I can't even start to think about it.
Maybe if we had a producer with a god mic.
Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, Bill. Yeah, where okay. You at?
Yeah, okay.
Dude, that would be the catchphrase for our fucking podcast. It'd be great. We'd yeah, get okay. Hashtag, yeah, okay.
That's they a good would, point.
Dude, they would sell like hotcakes with the way he says it yeah, and okay. Just that delivery. That would become a catchphrase for this podcast. I'm telling you, it would go viral.
I think Bill would be the best on the God mic because he's just laid back and just literally waiting in the wings to come on when he's called upon.
And he does a great job with it. I think we need to give him a call, pitch him our idea, and see if he wants to join.
Hey, waiting in the wings, get your ass over here.
Hey, waitress, get your ass over here.
He's not, he wouldn't be overbearing. He'd just be on the God mic, like on standby, you know, on the on-deck circle, ready to come in when called upon.
When called upon, he would have anything that we talk about, he would, you know, bring it up on the screen so we could see it, our guests could see it. And then, you know, if anybody sends in questions, which is something I would love for our listeners to send in, whether it's you're just typing in an email, audio message, video, whatever it is, and podcastforall@gmail.com. If you have any questions about anything or you'd like to hear our opinions, I'd love to see or hear what our listeners have to say.
Well, the problem is we do get those on a hourly, daily, weekly basis. There's not enough time in our week to get back to everyone.
To get
so when
to
there's
all of them,
I like responding to a handful, but don't take it personal when Jeff and I don't get back to you because this week, for instance, we had like 57 in the inbox.
And that's what I'm saying. If we had our producer, he could pick like three or four good ones. Not well, they're all good. They're all wet.
Well, they're all wet.
But he could pick, you know, three or four juicy questions.
Mom, my sandwich is all wet.
Yeah, they're all wet.
And read them to us, and we could answer them on the air for our listeners. We could have our own little...
He was too busy for us this week. I saw he went to London for like 36 hours.
Yeah, it must be rough when you decide to wake up and take your wife to London for the evening. And, hey, you know, it's funny. He took a picture in front of the
Buckingham Palace.
What are those, you know, the security yards or whatever? I have no idea what they're called.
In front of the palace?
Yeah, but it was on a horse. I wanted to comment on it and say that is about the most American tourist photo I've ever seen.
Standing next to the guard on a horse.
And right above him, there's a sign that says, warning, horse may kick or whatever it says. It's
or
like,
bite.
Yeah.
I did see that.
I love the picture. I would get the same picture myself.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely hilarious.
But total, like, Clark Griswold over in European Vacation. Like, oh, honey, watch this.
Oh, absolutely. And I would stand there and maybe, you know, get a kick from that horse, get sent, you know, 15, 20 feet across the street.
I'm trying to think what those guys are called, too, now that you brought it up.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Not security guards, not knights.
Yeah, see, this is why we need our producer, because he could be looking this up for us right now. But you know what? That's all right, because I have the good old interweb to look it up myself.
You got your naked lady machine fired up, searching for it? Come on, Bill, get off the Delta A330 and get on the God mic. By the way, folks, welcome to a podcast for all, season 11, episode 4. We will eventually get to Metallica once Jeff finds the answer on his mobile.
They're called
naked lady
the Queen's
device.
Guard. They consist of foot guards.
Foot guards?
Beef eaters. Yeoman wardens. Guards at Tower of London. They're
No, Buckingham Palace.
Well, you know, they're all the same.
No, they're not. The guys in the fucking black hats in the red coats on the horses guarding the queen.
Right there.
Guards at the Tower of... Yeah, that is them. But we're not at the Tower of London. We're at the fucking palace, bro.
There's all sorts of different... they're just... I don't know. Some guards. All right, cool. The big tall hat fucking...
On black horses.
Yeah, y'all know what we're talking about.
On the four horsemen ride. They come to take your life. Onto the bed of
night. They might take your life if you get up in their face and start, you
looking
know.
For God, Mike, man, ride.
Yeah, I'll looking for
our... day. We talked about Four Horsemen last week.
We did.
I am so excited.
Do you want to talk about... I was going to say, do you want to talk about it again?
I almost do, but again, sorry to everyone that emails us that we don't get back to. I see all your messages. I pass them on to Jeff. Jeff sees all your messages. Messages. There's just not enough hours in the day to get back with a proper response, but we do see it all.
If this is all we did for a living, then maybe we would have time, but Shane and I, we do have a thing called a life outside of this podcast, and it does consist. It takes up quite a bit of our time, to say the least.
You just got to keep living. LIVIN.
I've been not existing, living.
Dude, I'm excited for tonight. My favorite album of all time we're talking about. More Cliffham Notes from a little record cassette piece of vinyl called Ride the Lightning.
Hell yeah, man. Ride the Lightning. This is going to be a fun one. I say we jump right into this one, and I have a feeling there is going to be quite a few things said about
a lot to talk about.
Quite a few songs. I know a little bit about a lot, or I know a lot about a little.
Well, last week there was 12 songs. This week there's only 8, so I still think it could be longer.
No, I think they need to start bringing that back. I'd like to see bands start doing more 8 to 9 song records rather than this.
Thank God 72 seasons is 12.
I would have been happy with 9 even.
Seriously?
Yeah. Do it old school.
Time's ticking. The more the better, in my opinion.
True. But it's also about the quality, not the quantity, right?
You got a point. But when I think 12, I'm like, load, reload, black album.
Ooh, when you think
a lot of tunes to pick from here.
When you think 12, you think to yourself, well, damn, you only had 6 fucking years to write 12 songs, so
yeah.
Shit, why aren't there more?
Well, they've been busy. They've been listening to APFA.
Stealing our ideas. Our lawyers will be in touch.
Now, last week, I reminded everyone that I think that the Kill 'Em All album looks like this.
Yeah, I saw an edit come in via the old interweb.
And if you've listened to us for quite a while, you know that Jeff and I did a top album artwork episode where neither of us knew what our lists were, and Ride the Lightning came in both for our number ones. We don't have to dwell on this, but it's still one of the best albums in the history of music, in my opinion.
Do you think it deserves, was that the Smithsonian that?
A golf clap.
Isn't it the Smithsonian that Master of Puppets got inducted into or something like that?
Yes, sir.
Do you think it should be Ride the Lightning over Master of Puppets?
Now, are you talking about album art or music?
Well, something tells me both come into play when you get brought into that kind of recognition, that kind of, you know.
It's hard to answer that because you know Ride the Lightning is my favorite record of all time in all walks of music.
Do you think
it's not my favorite artwork, my favorite record?
Should it be more iconic than Master of Puppets?
In my mind, it should be, but I think it was a little early before they got to that puppet stage. That's why Puppets is so iconic and legendary.
Now, this is where we're going to get a total mind fuck.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think things would have changed if Master of Puppets came out second with the Ride the Lightning mix and Ride the Lightning came out third with the Master of Puppets mix? How do you think that would have changed in history? Do you think that Ride the Lightning, all biasness aside, do you think Ride the Lightning would have created the impact to go on to be what's now considered, as in Master of Puppets, the greatest thrash metal album of all time?
I'd say no, based on the songs on the record.
Okay.
It's still my favorite, though. There's favorite versus
legendary,
and where those songs stack up.
You already know I put Lightning over Puppets. Mm-hmm. Not by much, but it's enough to where it edges it out just enough.
Puppets just has that special sauce where everything came together at the right time, and the feel, the mix, the theme, everything, mm-hmm. the stars aligned, and then some for that time of their career. Not my favorite, but that's where everything hit a fucking grand slam.
Yeah. Agreed.
And keep in mind, Master Puppets is not even my second favorite record, so that's why it's hard to discuss it like that.
Well, let's hold Puppets for next week or next month or whenever we dive into that record.
Christmas time or some shit.
Some shit.
Hopefully Christmas time or some shit.
We got enough to talk about here with Ride the Lightning. Let's start at the top. Fight Fire with Fire.
Can't get any more badass of a song title than that.
And then when you hear it start, you wonder what you're getting yourself into. You're like, oh, this is supposed to be a metal record.
Why is there an acoustic guitar kicking off the record? This is something that should not be, but is amazing.
It strikes me as like they're almost like their King Diamond influence, because, you know, he has intros that are very kind of light and melodic, and then they bust into some...
You know what, that acoustic part, Hetfield at the time was using a really shitty acoustic that had nylon strings.
Are you saying it's shitty because it had nylon strings, or it was just a shitty nylon string guitar?
It was a shitty beat up nylon string acoustic guitar, and it doesn't sound like that, but they made it sound like absolute gold.
I had to make sure that you weren't trying to say that nylon string guitars are shitty.
Not at all. I know some nylon string acoustics are thousands of dollars and absolutely mint. This thing was an absolute shitter that they recorded on.
Well, they turn shit into gold. It's
what do you think Cliff's influence was on this song? Writing credits, Hetfield, Ulrich, and Burton, by the way. When you hear that intro and then it gets into the just fucking melt your face off with fire, but that intro, how much do you think Cliff was behind that?
I think Cliff was behind a lot of their early melodic influence based upon interviews and what it seems like, you know, coming from Kill 'Em All into this record. Obviously, Dave had a lot more influence on Kill 'Em All, and you can hear that, especially based upon Megadeth's first few records.
Sure, sure.
Obviously, Cliff being more of a true musician would allude to them using him for real quote-unquote music, not just thrash metal. But that's the thing. The dude was an absolute savage and maniac, so it makes you wonder, do you think that maybe he was getting in on some of them thrashy-ass riffs too? Like, you can't think that all the melody was just strictly Cliff.
No, I'm not saying that.
No, I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying, like, in general, for, like, you know, argument's sake or whatever, conversation sake.
We'll get to these songs later, but think of the record, Fight, Fade, Cthulhu. Think of those songs that none of that style, none of that shit existed a year ago on Kill 'Em All. Nothing.
Well, and even the melody line in Trapped Under Ice during the, you know, what is it, right before the solo, the little bridge part, even that's much catchier than anything you heard on Kill 'Em All. And that's a fast-paced metal song. Creeping, that same thing.
Do unto others as they've done to you, but what the hell is this podcast coming to?
Where are the Cliff Notes? Because when you don't want to listen or read the whole thing, you just get a snippet.
We all shall die.
Wah! Wah!
now. When you hear the original, who would have ever thought that a karate chop would be in this song live?
Yeah. That's not something that Cliff probably foreseen, but no. I'm sure he has. I'm sure he's given good old Bob Trujillo the thumbs up.
Robert, the gods are laughing.
Wah!
Killer song, dude. Killer riff. Killer double bass.
What a lot interesting of people don't kick realize. Sound on this record. Very interesting
kick mix. What a lot of people don't realize, ride cymbal on this song that's never been duplicated live.
Oh. The more you know.
Just think of all the times during the chorus and the double bass like bridge part where it's ride cymbal, but you never think of this song with ride.
It's kind of like Saint Anger. Every time you hear the...
True.
That's a ride, but he never used that live.
And very early on of using the sample of the bomb at the end is just huge.
Yes.
When that bomb hits, whether it's live... Well, they used to use it live, but when it hits on the record, it's an iconic moment for an opening track.
They should bring that back. And as it explodes, it goes into Ride the Lightning. Now, this is where I actually wanted to jump right into the Invoting for All, because it has to do with Ride the Lightning and, well, Master Puppets and Justice for All. Do you think that Metallica should have continued with a trend of having an album title song on the record? Or do you think it was smart that they only did it for a few records? Do you think it should have continued on past Injustice for All?
So it's basically the title tracks?
It's basically just a yes or no question. And do you think it's something...
You think it should have gone on for 42 years?
Well, that's what I'm asking. Do you think it's something that, you know, that could have been their theme? Like, look at their, you know, their last two records, and that's now including 72 seasons in that, because obviously we see that we have that, and then Hardwired as well. And it, of course, it seems like they really came around full circle back to their roots. So it makes you wonder, do you think they should have kept that? Maybe name the Black Album something different, you know, because they're not gonna have a song called Metallica. Maybe they will, maybe they wouldn't, you know. Load, Reload.
Yeah, they kind of got off the wagon until Saint Anger, though.
Yeah,
and then Death Magnetic. Nope.
It kind of always made me wonder, why didn't they have a song called Kill 'Em All off of Kill 'Em All? It seemed like, especially then, that would have been a perfect title for a song name off that era, you know what I mean?
It is kind of cool, though. 42 years, they kind of dabbled in it, got out of it, dabbled with it, got out of it, got back into it.
So you're going to lead with no, they shouldn't have done it for all their records?
I would say no. My vote is no.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when I was younger. So when I was younger, I would have said yes, because I always thought it was kind of cool that they did that. But now, as I'm older, I would say no.
It's interesting. I was just thinking, all the title tracks have been track two, except Hardwired. And 72.
Yeah.
If you think about that, leading right up to, I mean, till, you know,
Saint Angry.
Later in their career, they're like, okay, let's get out of the track two bullshit here.
Kind of liked it, though. I did kind of like it.
I love Ride the Lightning. My name's associated with it.
Yeah, well, he claims he has writing credits in this record, the next record, and even a little bit of the following record, or some of his musical parts were used.
So he says. You know what's weird? I was just thinking how that bomb ends in Fight Fire. There's absolutely no pause before the intro to Ride the Lightning.
Yeah, it goes right into Ride the Lightning. I always liked that. I thought that was cool.
Oh, we're off to the races. Here we go.
Well, and this is, with this, you know, song, obviously you hear some harmony in Fight Fire with Fire, but this song, right off the bat, you're starting off with harmonized little leads that both James and Kirk are playing, which in previous, you know, recordings, aka
did not happen.
We haven't really heard a lot of that. So now it's like, all right, within the span of a year, it seems like James has gone from being this guy who can barely sing, is shoddy at best at guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And now is like, I mean, you see the videos from the Ride the Lightning tour of him playing Creeping Death, and it's just like, whoa, dude, in 1 year you went from being this
right
weird prepubescent teenager almost, shy is what kid you looked like, to just like this fucking riff monster. What happened?
It's like he played every day for a year for 7 hours a day.
And then you learned how to play guitar well. And so now we have harmonies, and now we have heavy riffing. You have a song that has a very heavy sounding verse, and for the time and for the style, kind of a catchy chorus. It's almost borderline like sing along.
Burning in my brain. I can feel Jeff's flame. Yeah.
Think about it. Fight fire with fire. Not much melody going on there. So
no,
this
just
is the first
thrash.
This is the first song you're hearing James actually singing a little bit more melody than anything else he's ever done.
Now it's time to die. Ooh, die.
Right.
One of the best lines that I always sing out loud when we play this, strapped in the electric chair, this can't be happening to me.
It's a good one.
It's just how that strapped in the electric chair, it just flows so well. After the death in the air, it's just, when you look at all this, it flows so well. It's not, it has no Kill 'Em All feel at all. You're talking about harmonics, or harmonies. You're talking about structure. It's just everything in this song flows.
It went from essentially being a glorified punk rock thrash band to now, all right, let's establish ourselves. Let's show the world that we can be more than just a fast metal band.
And then it really picks up and gets going fast, and then the solo rips. One of my favorite Kirk solos.
Mine
and you
too.
Always said that solo is so easy to play. You just need to be warmed up to play it.
If I'm warmed up a little bit, yeah. I mean, I
like, this isn't a song you like in the number two or three slot.
I mean, it is if I play for, like, you know, if I riff for 5 minutes before we're going on. But you know me, I'm always like off doing something until the very, well, not off doing something, but like basically
not playing
right until right before we go on, and then I freaking throw my guitar on and run on stage, and it's like, all right, here we go.
So you need 5 or 10 minutes to be warmed up to play that solo.
Yeah, even
comfortably.
Five minutes. I mean, I can do it. I have done it, obviously, because we've had it early in the set. It's just not. It's not ideal. I feel like my hand feels a little bit more tired than I would want it to. But again, it's not that difficult of a solo, so you can manage it. It's just, it's a decently long solo.
Top 10 Kirk solo, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree.
If this is true, just let it be. Waken by horrid scream. Ah! Freed from this frightening dream.
It makes you wonder, you know, because at the time they were still young and they're all about showing off their skills. But it seems like, so you have this ripping solo in Ride the Lightning, and then we move on to For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is, you know, almost considered potentially, quote unquote, the first Metallica song without a guitar solo, like a real guitar solo. And at that time, this idea of serving the song, you know, just keeping it to what the song needs.
That's a Lars quote lately.
I don't think that was a mindset at that time, because that was something they seemed to struggle with even when they were recording the Black Album. You could hear Bob trying to not maybe say those words.
Simplify.
But yeah, exactly. I felt like at this time they're still trying to show off, and it's interesting that they do a song like For Whom the Bell Tolls, not much of a solo there, but that solo works because it serves the song.
That's like an exercise like we were talking about last week with Jump in the Fire.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know what I've realized? It's almost like Metallica. The reason this is why they broke through so much bigger is they knew the right balance. They had the perfect balance of what, and they, what's crazy is they didn't even necessarily realize it or mean to do it 100%. It just happened. Like it was, like you said, the stars aligned. They had this perfect balance of being able to be this thrash metal band and fit in with a band like Slayer or Anthrax or Megadeth or any of those bands of those times or at that time, but then still have melody, have something that's not over the top. It's really interesting. It's something that I don't really think about until we're doing something like this and we're breaking it down, you know, kind of piece by piece.
You think about Fight, you think about Ride, and then Bells. It gets so simple,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, so heavy with so much groove and bounce, and it became legendary.
It's almost their, like their AC/DC song.
Yes, very much so. But think of dun 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 cha 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 cha.
Yeah, that's a little too groovy for the AC/DC boys.
But that for Ride the Lightning and for a thrash band, that right there had a bunch of groove and bounce just in that dun 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 cha 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 cha.
It's almost like you could foresee where they were gonna go. With like the Black Album and Load and Reload, even early on, based upon a song like that. That song, that's got that Load kind of swingy groove.
Think of all the triplet fills that I play when we play that live.
Oh, absolutely.
Do, 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 got to do. And then do, 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 all triplets there.
Now we can, it should be the other way around. It's not, Load has the For Whom the Bell Tolls groove.
It does. Let's go back to the beginning, though. When you're young and you heard this song for the first time, it was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, I don't know if I knew.
If you didn't hear Pulling Teeth and you heard Bells first, it was like, what is making that sound like it's a fucking some special machine that's not a guitar?
Right. I don't know if I knew when I was young the first time I heard that, that was the bass. Maybe I did.
Like,
maybe
how is that bass? But and what other band would use a bass for that part?
Right. Primus.
I mean, yeah, but at this time,
right.
It's like, is that James? Is that Kirk? Or is that just some fucking sample they threw in?
Sample. There was no such thing as samples then.
Nope. It's the one and only Cliff Burton. Another writing credit, by the way.
Hey, there's some melody in that song.
Think about how big Bells has been in their live show for most of their career.
It's been a staple. It's definitely been a staple. Yeah.
I'd say top five staple.
Yeah, it's
what
not
show do you go to and you don't hear Bells?
It's definitely not quite as listener fatigue as Sandman is or has become, but Bells is it's getting close. It's almost on that sad but true.
Oh, there's fatigue with that song, especially when I'm at a sporting event. Dana, dana, right. Bow, bow. I was like, yeah, okay, let's get to kickoff.
I would rather hear that than Enter Sandman, though.
I agree, but it's getting to that point where
it's
every game or every bar band that thinks that they're a good cover band plays it, and it's like, oh god. So last week we were talking about how young they were writing Seek. Seek is like a huge anthem of theirs now. I would say the Kill 'Em All overplayed song is Seek, and the Ride the Lightning overplayed song is Bells. Easily.
That.
Don't even say the next song. I know what you're thinking.
Well, I was going to say, we should look it up. Is Bells been played more than Fade and Creep?
Not more than Creep. Stand by.
Because then Creep would be the anthem, but...
But you and I aren't sick of hearing Creep, let's be honest.
No.
Creep's been played 30 times more than Bells in their career.
So would that be considered the anthem because that's the big...
Yeah, but... when you hear... Dun, 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 dun,
This is true, though, because
when you hear the bell
not...
at the fucking Wild hockey game, you're like, yeah, okay.
Well, and anthem-wise, they're not playing Creepy Death when someone scores a goal at the Wild game. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Like, if you played Creep and Bells for a fan that really didn't know the band,
they're going to know
90% would be like, oh, yeah, I've heard Bells. And you play Creep, they'd be
oh,
like,
oh, yeah, that's that song that was in Zombieland. I've heard that song before.
Very true.
Now,
that was interesting to look up. Bells just 30 times more than Creep in their career played live.
I didn't know that. What about Fade? Are we
done talking about Bells?
Well, I want to know where Fade lands as far as how many times it's been played compared to those two.
My Naked Lady Machine's on fire tonight looking up stats.
Good.
Fade is about 300 times shorter than Bells.
That's interesting.
1,212 times.
80 or 90 times?
Kirk Hammett's first writing credit on Ride Z Lightning, by the way.
Fade?
Yes. James, the whole band got credits on Fade. Not Dave. I wasn't around for that one.
Yeah, he didn't know how to write a ballad quite like that. Not yet. Yeah, so obviously...
More acoustic. Get the nylon back.
I've told the story about Binge and Purge and all that, so I'm not going to go into that again. But yeah, this song it's pivotal. It's big. It's huge. It's a song that I think for a lot of fans really changed their perspective. Definitely changed my perspective. You know what I mean? It was that song that really opened my eyes.
Met fan Mike Mueller said it's the best song ever written in the history of music. Big statement.
Well, sorry, Met fan Mike, you're wrong. Elton John said that Nothing Else Matters is, so.
That's true. Elton said that on the record, so we'll talk to Mike next week at Mascuda about Fade to him.
Yeah, we'll see what he says. It's really interesting.
Go ahead.
It's really interesting that a song this early on in their career, I feel like they were, as far as like the ballad slot, you know, of their records, it's interesting that this early on they never topped it. Sanitarium's a good song, not better than Fade. One sure as shit isn't better than Fade. Unforgiven, close, still not better. Until It Sleeps, Unforgiven 2. Dirty Window. Oh, wait. Day That Never Comes. You know what I mean, though? Second record and...
Too Far Gone?
Too Far Gone. They have never topped they've never topped it as far as a ballad is concerned. It's really kind of weird.
I got to get back to my thoughts here.
The reason why I think it's weird is because they just weren't so undeveloped with their musical abilities. And I'm sure a lot of people would argue that all those songs I just named, at least one of them is better than Fade. And I'm just being biased, and this is just my opinion. Of course, it's not someone else's opinion, but...
No one but me can save myself, but it's too late.
Lyrically, the way the song flows...
I can't think melody. What I wanted to say. Is it safe to say that Fade to Black... I'm going to make a very big statement right here, and I want you to timestamp it with the date.
11:23 on, what is it, Tuesday, January 17th.
Fade to Black is Metallica's best song to date.
See, I don't, I'm not far off with that statement. That's a
big statement that I will not be able to retract for a long time. But
I've always said Justice is my favorite, but Fade might be, when you just think of what is the best overall written song by them, you might be right. That might be the best song they've ever written.
Not favorite, best song.
Right, exactly.
Not favorite, but best.
It's close. It's definitely, it's very, very close to
right.
the best song, if not the best song they've ever written. And again, think about that second record coming off of Kill 'Em All.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck? How is that even possible?
It was the Nylon Strings.
Yeah, apparently it was Copenhagen, Denmark.
Fleming. So when people, it's usually at work when, like, captains, mechanics, like, people learn about me and Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
Or they learn about the band, or they learn about the podcast, or my new neighbors meet me.
Eating pizza, learning about Cuba.
Are you referencing Spicoli?
Yeah.
Just what the hell do you think you're doing? Ordering some pizza, learning about Russia. Was it Russia or Cuba?
It's Cuba.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
My pen just died. I'm fucking pissed. I was trying to write down Spicoli track. Remember that one.
Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Mr. Spicoli, you're on dangerous ground here. You're causing a major disturbance on my time.
You have to think about when people meet you and or they hear about the band or the podcast, how many people go, oh, I love Metallica, Jeff. What's your favorite song? How many times have you heard that question?
I'll tell you, on the road with the band, I've heard that a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, meeting fans before, after a show.
What's your favorite Metallica song? And you know what, especially in the later years, you know, because it was too hard to answer. I would just say, I don't really listen to them much anymore.
That was your political answer to get out of the jam.
It's so much easier to say that. And for a good amount of time, I mean, especially when we were playing very heavily, that was a very true statement.
Right.
It was a very true statement. I didn't, right. You know what I mean?
I didn't listen to it either.
And you're playing
every night.
That's what I'm saying. So it actually was a very easy way to get out of it. But yeah, when someone asks you that, it's tough to answer it. I mean, I feel like for a long time, I've always had what my favorite song was, mm-hmm. but never really thought about what is quote unquote the best.
And when I have to answer it, I usually say it's usually something off of Lightning or the Justice record. And then if people aren't familiar, they're like, well, give me an example. And I'm like, it's right up there with Fade to Black, Blackened, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Because it has, like I've talked about this a million times before, it's the complete package of a Metallica song. It has everything. And it's my favorite, and it's melodic.
Yep.
The harmonies, and then it gets heavy, the double bass, the solo. The outro, like, takes you to another planet, and it's hard to beat. And it's one of those songs that is popular. It is a hit. It's a hit, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would consider it a hit.
And I don't like saying a greatest hit is one of my favorite Metallica songs, being the hardcore fans that we all are, but Fade to Black is Metallica's best song.
Within reason, and even, I mean, I give Sandman a hard time. And so that's why I say within reason. But when it comes down to it, I used to really be one of those kind of music fans that I was like, well, if it's the popular song, I'm not going to pick that. I'm going to find like the best least popular song. And that's right. going to be my favorite song because I want to be different. It's like,
that's like saying it's electric. And then half the people will be like, never heard it. What's it about?
No fun. Well,
right.
Yeah. But the thing is,
Bread fan.
Is within reason, there's a reason why it's a popular song. Probably because it's a good song. It's okay right. that it's popular. That doesn't mean that you're any less of a fan because you want to rock out to Sandman versus the guy that wants to rock out to fucking Trapped Under Ice. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
It's like, if you like it, you like it. And this is coming from the guy who literally rips a song like Sandman apart all the time. But hey... There's a reason why it's popular.
We agree. Now I will just say goodbye. Ba-da-da, 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 ba-da-da-da.
Goodbye.
Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da. How's that for a transition?
That was perfect. That sounds just like Shane Aoki in full effect, my friend.
And now we're talking about what? Shane O'Riffing?
Shane O'Riffing. We already know how you feel about Trapped Under Ice and being able to see it live, but how about...
I feel such a relief being able to see that at the 40th. And the Zazula show, but the 40th, I peed myself a little bit.
So obviously I know that you love the song, you love this record, you mm-hmm. wanted to hear that song live because it's a song that you had yet to hear. But where does that song actually fall as far as, I'm not saying like a top five, but like, is that a song that's fairly high on your list, or would you say it probably falls somewhere in the middle?
Trapped would probably in the, let's take the entire Metallica discography.
Nice.
Not discography. I'd hate that word. Discography. It would be probably in the top third of their entire career. So what are we talking here? Top 30, 40, 50?
Right.
Somewhere in there? Well, top 50 now.
Excuse me.
When Ride the Lightning's your favorite record, you end up chasing Trapped Under Ice, Cthulhu. I just lost my whole fucking train of thought. Oh, and Escape Live.
Yeah.
Like when that's your record, Trapped, Escape, and Cthulhu, let's admit it, don't happen every day. But when they do, pretty magical show. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And in the last year, I've heard Trapped twice. I don't want to get into never hearing Escape. I was supposed to be at that show and it didn't happen. And I've heard Cthulhu now 4 or 5 times. And Cthulhu Live, it's just, that's a fucking special night. Just that song alone.
Yeah, that's definitely a song I'd like to hear live. It's not a song that I will personally go and listen to very often, but it's definitely a song I would love to hear live.
We're going to get to that. But Trapped to me is... Trapped is the fucking thrashy song on that record. There's nothing slow about Trapped. There's no fucking let up. And let's be honest, it's a pretty short song.
I'll be honest. I actually think that Trapped is the black sheep of that record.
What?
And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean, like, to me, that's the... I've always thought of that song as the odd song out.
But Jeff, Eyes of Glass stare directly at death.
I think because I've always loved the song. I still do, but it's called Trapped Under Ice. It's kind of cheesy. And the riff...
Now, are you comparing this to the next song we're going to talk about, or this has nothing to do with Escape?
No, it has nothing to do with Escape.
When you're talking about cheesy and like
the lyrics are kind of cheesy, but like
for Trapped Under Ice,
for Escape, yeah, the lyrics are cheesy, but the music is great for it.
It's great because it's so different. But Trapped is if Fight Fire wasn't on Ride, Trapped would be the thrash song for the record.
I understand that, and I'm not saying that the song doesn't belong on the record. I just think, to me, that's always been kind of the odd one out. I feel like Escape actually fits better with that record than Trapped Under Ice does.
Trapped to Ride is like Whiplash and Metal Militia on Kill 'Em All.
Yeah.
No let up.
Yeah, I'd agree. So what about Freezing. Escape then? Oh, sorry.
Can't move at all. Screaming. Jeff's in Minnesota. I am dying to live. Cry out. I'm trapped in Minneapolis. What was your question?
I said, so what do you think about Escape then? We talked about it being a little bit cheesy, but the music is great. Escape.
I want to talk more about the fucking Trapped Under Ice.
I don't, because I'm stuck in the ice. See, you get to be in the warmth. I'm always trapped under ice.
Cry out. I'm trapped under ice.
Love the song, but I always thought the fast beat under the...
Love how it
holds it. Like, it's just kind of a weird riff with this fast beat underneath it. That's why I always kind of felt
and
like...
It doesn't stop. It's just pedal on the metal the whole song.
That doesn't always mean it's better.
Fine, be that way.
I love the song. I have nothing against it. I'm just saying I think it's the odd man out, and I didn't even mean that in a bad way.
Okay. Just checking.
Still a great song. Come on. You know how I feel about this record.
Gaga. dun 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 dun.
I still remember when I first heard the song.
Track 6, the most sought after. Well, I should say Escape is right up there with Fixture for what people are dying to hear still.
Yeah, it's definitely the most sought after live song. That's like the golden goose. That's the golden ticket. Yeah, I remember when I first heard the chorus of this song, I didn't even realize it was Metallica.
As soon as you said that, I was thinking back. You said golden ticket. I'm picturing Charlie's grandpa in bed with that freeloader meme.
Willy frickin' Wonka, dude.
Didn't even get out of bed wearing the fucking gunny sack for pants.
Hey, he got out once he found out that he was going to get a fortune.
Fucking right. Off to the factory. I can get dressed for that.
I love that movie. I don't even care if Grandpa Joe was a freeloading bum. Grandpa Joe is the goat.
Feel no pain, but my life ain't easy. This song does not belong on the record, but it's become so iconic, it does. And if it wasn't on the record, there would be a big empty hole in all our worlds.
See, and I think it does belong on the record.
Talk about groove and bounce. Here we go.
Listen to the verse of this song and listen to the verse of Ride the Lightning.
I think
it's the only song has what you would consider this. I don't even think the lyrics are that cheesy. The chorus maybe a little bit because of the melody line, but it's actually, to me, it's much more of a personal type of song if you read the lyrics.
One with my mind, they just can't see.
It was a great time to put out a song like that. It fits that time period very well. For being having like the perfect amount of heavy with like to me it's like the modern day, like what the bands are doing nowadays. You've got these bands that play fairly heavy music but then have very catchy choruses. Something that
Death Punch.
Sure.
Nickelback.
I mean, I like Nickelback. I really do, but everything is catchy about Nickelback.
Godsmack.
And anybody who says it's not is just a hater.
Do you like the new Godsmack?
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
I think it's great.
I like the new album cover. Have you seen they've released the album art for the new record?
I have.
It's pretty badass considering it's going to be their last record.
Not as cool as Ride the Lightning, but it's up there.
It's up there. It's cool.
A lot of Metallica fans rip on Godsmack. I've never understood it. I've always been a fan.
They kind of got the Creed Nickelback shake for a while there. It's because they were popular and successful, you know, just like Five Finger Death Punch became. And everyone will say, well, they suck. They have, you know, this and that, people that do this for them, and they're just whatever. That's fine. They may suck, but they
still enjoy them.
And they make a lot of money, so.
Rape my mind and destroy my feelings. Don't tell me what to do. Some very cheesy ass drum fills in this song, but they've become iconic and fun to listen to. Fun to play as well. We've played this song a handful of times.
Maybe if Lars was a better drummer, he would have made the fills a little bit more interesting. I'm just kidding.
When you're playing Fight Fire, Ride, Fade, and Trapped, you deserve to have a little easy breather song like Escape on the record.
Man,
come on.
Ride the Lightning is not that tough. Fade to Black is not that tough.
Careful with the Ride the Lightning on drum statement. Fight Fire is not hard. That's just an endurance test. This is weird. You and I have never played Fight Fire together.
No, we haven't.
Before you joined the band, we played Fight Fire like 84 years ago.
Maybe we'll get the chance to do it someday. Who knows?
I'm better at playing Fire than I am playing Battery and Blacket, because on Fight Fire, the fucking snare is on the downbeat, and I'm a lot more comfortable with that.
Well,
the snare is on 1, 2, 3, and 4. Repeat.
Lars is the heavy metal fill rut. Likes to keep it 4-4.
Fight's not that hard to play. It's a lot.
I don't think anything on this record is that hard to play.
It matters if you're trying to nail it like the album or play the live version.
Fair enough. Definitely fair
enough.
The
way they play Fight Now, I'm not a fan of. We talked about this before.
Right.
There's parts in there that get skipped, and I'm like, it's... Oh, I hate to admit this on our show, but they play that song fucking lazy.
Well, they're tired.
I know, but that song's not hard. And there's also fills in Ride the Lightning that he plays that are really lazy that... That's just a song where you don't fuck with it and you just play the album fills, and it's so much more powerful.
Lars is like that elderly black lady in Forrest Gump when he says, "Those are awfully nice shoes." And she says, "My feet hurt." That's what Lars said after playing fucking Fight Fire with Fire. He said, "My feet hurt. You know, my feet hurt."
That's exactly what it is. Great comparison, by the way.
Those must be comfortable shoes. I wish I had shoes like that.
My feet hurt.
There's just moments where he needs to play. Fight Fire and Ride the Lightning are classic examples of fills that need to be the album version. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
How did we get talking about this? Oh, the escape fills are really cheesy, but they've become iconic.
Some of his lazy fills, though, end up becoming, like, as far as what he does live, I actually, within reason, like better. Like, moving on to Creeping Death.
Nope, I'm not ready to talk about that yet.
Okay.
The way he plays Bells, the way he plays Fade. Powerful, very close to the record. Lightning, I'd say in the last 10 years, the way he's played Lightning, it's changed, and it's not for the better.
I love Metallica, but they are definitely, when it comes to a band that can't recreate what they do on a record, they are probably at the top for bands that don't play what's on the record.
Well, wait a minute.
That's a fact. That is a fact.
No.
don't play anything that's even remotely close to the record most of the time live.
Stop.
That's a fact. They've always been that way. Kirk doesn't play any solo the same. Lars, listen to the difference in his live drums versus what he does on a record.
I'm not talking 100% nail it, but you can't say that some songs aren't live and some songs aren't record worthy when you hear them.
Everything is record worthy. I'm saying they don't play anything to what the record is.
I'm going to give you a good example. One live is pretty damn close to the record.
It's pretty close, but there's definitely some changes. I'm just saying in general, if you look at it, this isn't a rip. This is just a fact. They, as far as a live band goes, are definitely one of the more...
Bells.
They do it more than a lot of other bands do. I've seen quite a few bands live.
Puppets.
And as far as recreating what they do on the record, for the most part, they usually just do whatever they feel on that given night. And that's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But to say that they recreate and play exactly what's on the record consistently, they haven't been that band since 1989.
I'm not saying note for note, but I'm saying in the ballpark. The songs that they don't play in the ballpark are like Fight, Ride, Sanitarium is really fucking different drum-wise live.
Again, this was not a rip because I Batteries do like...
Batteries got four different fucking versions to it. Every time they play a battery, it's a new version.
I like what they do with things live. I like how they change things up. It makes it more interesting because then...
I do too, because when I get to play it live, I can say, am I going to play the record? Am I going to play 1986? Am I going to play Cunning Stunts? Or am I going to play the fucking Neems version?
I like it because then when you have a million different live versions, it's actually like, oh, hey... It's interesting to listen to it because it's not the same fucking thing every time. And now a band like Dream Theater, I give them all the props. I absolutely love them, but they play everything exactly the same. Fill for fill, note for note, everything is the same exact way as it is on the record. And that is consistent throughout every show. Agreed. Sounds great. And it's perfect for that band. But every live performance you're going to hear, the only maybe inconsistency you're going to hear is the difference in the singer's voice evolving over the years.
Agreed. Agreed.
So, and again, I wasn't ripping on Metallica by saying they don't do that, but they don't play a lot. They don't recreate what they do on the record. And again, that's okay. I think that's actually a good thing. It shows that they're human and they play. Mm-hmm. That's feeling. They're playing whatever they feel at that given moment. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Some of the times what they're feeling is ugly.
Fair enough. But I do like I said,
there are some feels that have happened in the last 5 years where I'm like, how is that what you're feeling during this era? Because it ain't fitting, bud.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I guess where I was going with it is like, I do like some of the things that they have done to change, mm-hmm. you know, like Creepy Death. Are you ready to talk about that one?
I like the short intro better. Speaking of changing things up.
What I love about that is every era, it seems like he did for that intro fill, you know, because like early on it's, you know what I mean?
That's
the classic album record fill. Mm-hmm. But he has changed up that intro fill quite a bit through each different era, and I like that.
If you'd like to hear me sound like a ultra turbo nerd, there are 6 variations of that Creeping Death intro fill.
See, I didn't know there was that many exactly, but I knew there was a decent amount, and I love, and I know you and I have gone back and forth on this because you say that it's kind of the lazy way out. I love the freaking through the never just simple tap, 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 you know what I mean?
Ka-cha, ka-cha, ka-da-da, ka-ka-tu-tu.
I love that, Phil. I think that is...
Wait a minute. Ka-cha, ka-cha, ka-da, ka-ka-tu-tu-tu.
Yeah. Yep. That's a great fill to start that. I like that better than the album. Legit. Album version is iconic, but there's just something to be said about that live version. I think it just has a little bit more power with that fill.
The worst version of that fill was actually during the Justice era, Seattle 89. He just keeps time on the hi-hat. There are no toms whatsoever, and it goes into 2 crashes.
Yep. Yep.
Now that I see it, you're like, yep. Fuck, that is retarded.
That is not... Yeah, no, that's not one of the...
That's what they call the hi-hat version.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Let's just get into Creeping Death off the record. We've been falling into this live category fucking rabbit hole, bud.
The live, I like it. Like I said, all the variations make it so much more interesting to revisit their live catalog because within reason, again, within reason, you don't 100% know what you're going to get depending on which era, which night, you know what I mean? And I like it.
We didn't talk about much live last week during Kilmo. Now we're on this live kick. It's all because the iconic fills an escape.
Yeah.
Went down this discussion. I love it.
I love it, too. It's good stuff.
Da, 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 da. By the way, writing credits, all 4 members, by the way. Creeping Death is not... I change hands here. Creeping Death, that's what she said. Creeping Death is not... a greatest hit, but to a hardcore Metallica fan, it's
a greatest hit.
Top 5, top 10 songs of 42 years, let's be honest.
Yes, and that's another top, probably top 10, top 15 Kirk solo.
I'd say Creep
for me personally.
I'd say all of us fans, crazy fans, new fans, old fans, any fan in general, we've heard Creep damn near every show. And you know what? When it kicks in, everyone's like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, Creep for me is definitely one of those songs that no matter...
Doesn't get old.
Hell, in my Dream No More set, I could have put anything in there and I still started my show with Creeping Death.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those songs that no matter how many times you hear it live, you just don't get sick of it. I could get sick of hearing Master of Puppets live, hearing One live, hearing Wherever I May Roam. But Creeping Death, I don't know. There's something special about that song. Gets you pumped up and fired up every time.
We were talking earlier. They've been played almost the same amount of times. When you hear bells, it's kind of like, okay. But when you hear Creep, everyone's like, oh yeah, here we go, baby.
Yes.
You know?
Can we argue that the main riff for Creeping Death is one of the most underrated metal riffs that doesn't get enough attention and appreciation because it gets overshadowed by pretty much everything from Master of Puppets and Injustice for All?
Right.
Very simple riff, Creeping Death is, but man, that is a great fucking riff. I would argue that that riff, for me, is better than the Blackened riff.
For me personally,
I would probably pick that riff over.
Now, last week we talked about how easy and catchy the Jump in the Fire riff was,
right?
Along with the No Remorse and Seek and Destroy riff. Tell me this isn't at the top of your list.
Very easy but iconic riff.
Oh, dude, that's how big does that riff make that song?
Well, and again, it's the riff, it's the structure, it's how they formulated this to somehow, again.
That should be a totally different song.
Right. Well, the time period, you know, I'm always thinking about where their mindset was and where they were musically, and to think like, all right, we're going to write this part without maybe even intentionally doing it. That's going to be this crowd sensation. That's everybody knows what to do. They created something there where they could get the crowd involved in what they're doing. So again, it goes back to that balance that they knew exactly the right formula. Like, this song is a thrash metal fucking song, but we are still going to get the crowd involved. It's this heavy ass verse. It's this chorus that is still heavy, but catchy enough to where we can have the crowd sing it. It's not overburdened with lyrics, so it's easy for a kind of call and response from the crowd. And then we're also going to put in this breakdown where we get everybody chanting one fucking word. It's so
die,
simple,
asshole.
That's what I'm saying. It's so simple, but yet
you're singing
just
die.
It worked. It's crazy to think that formula was so ahead of its time for that genre of music.
You said it last week too. Think of these young bucks playing clubs. They're writing Creep and Seek and Destroy, never thinking it'd be a call and response stadium staple.
Exactly. Because according to them at that time, I mean, yeah, sure. They wanted to make it big. They wanted to make money, but it doesn't seem like they really gave a shit about it. It's not like they wrote that song with the intention that they were going to be selling out arenas doing it.
I shall soon be there, deadly mass. That was a good point about the main riff. If you didn't have a Puppets or Blackened or, you know, kind of disposable iconic riff,
it definitely gets overshadowed
when you think of a heavy metal riff.
Like
when you said Puppets and Blackened, I was thinking disposable as well.
Yeah, or even Battery. That's been up there too.
Good point.
Damage Inc. You know,
I don't think of Damage when I think of iconic riff. I just think of 4 minutes of goddamn thrash and no let up.
I just think of what people consider iconic, like metal riffs. You know, you put mm-hmm. those songs in there. It's like, you know, Rain in Blood or Peace Sells, or you know what I mean? Just these iconic songs that kind of stood the test of time and have these great riffs, but yet Creeping Death is just not talked about that much. And it's not a very complicated riff, but it's a very powerful riff.
And not overplayed, because when I travel the world and listen to the radio, you don't hear it that much.
No, every once in a while, but not too much.
400 years, Jeff. Track 8.
Call of Cthulhu.
An 8 song record. LP. Short, in my opinion.
Short, but still fairly long, because the songs are long. And yes, I kind of wish bands would go back to doing the 8-9 song LP. I kind of like that.
No, I want 12, so we can get Too Far Gone. You must burn.
I still hope he sings Too Far Gone like 45. Too Far Gone.
Oh, I can't wait till this record. That's why we're going through this whole discography.
These Cliffham notes.
Cliffham notes, track 8, The Call of Cthulhu. By the way, they decided to spell Cthulhu different. I prefer their spelling over the H.P. Lovecraft book that it's written after.
Yeah, I mean, the way they spell it is pretty easy to remember, so that's nice.
Well, you and I, with our 8th grade educations, we prefer to be simplified.
Hey, man, don't lump me into
their discographies.
I graduated with a good GPA.
A 1.67842.
I had a 3.9 GPA when I graduated.
What? Who did your homework for you?
I had to buckle down in the end, and I took care of business.
Right to the finish line.
Right. Yeah. I had to get into college so then I could drop out and join your band.
College?
Carnival.
Jeff, you should finish your degree. No, one, the only tribute to Metallica needs a lead player. I'll be going now.
Yeah, exactly. not quite, but hey, that's a good story, so we're going to go with that.
Great story. What up-and-coming band ends their record with an instrumental in those days?
What up-and-coming band puts an instrumental on the first 4 records? Like, ballsy as fuck. Think about it.
It's funny. I don't consider Pulling Teeth an instrumental, but it is.
But it is. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. No, well, it isn't, because they say bass solo, take one. And then, of course, To Live Is To Die, you know, has James with his spoken word. So that's not an instrumental.
Yeah, to me it is.
It definitely is.
Yeah, an instrumental on your sophomore record, and it ends the record. You better make sure you have some strong material if your instrumental closes out the deal.
Was never a huge fan of the fact that this song closed out the record. I always thought that Cthulhu and Creep should have been switched. You know, kind of like how it's Orion Damage, but
mm-hmm.
To Live Is To Die, Dyer's Eve. But
mm-hmm.
still, great Yuck. Song.
Last week you said you wouldn't fuck with Kill 'Em All's track listing. This week you'd just swap Cthulhu and Creep?
Yeah, that'd be the only two.
Okay. Oh, I've got some writing credits on this instrumental. I wasn't even here for the record.
Yeah, Call of Cthulhu is an interesting song. It's definitely one of my least favorites out of the instrumentals.
What?
I don't think it's...
Right now, Cthulhu or Orion?
Oh, Orion for sure.
Yeah, I don't swing that way.
That's not even close. It'd be like 98%. It's not even close
for me. Really?
Yeah. I love Orion. I love the chunkiness of it and just...
Some of these riffs I didn't even...
Out of all the instrumentals, Orion's probably my favorite.
That just shows you how big Lightning is to me, and I'm just like, yep, Cthulhu over Orion any day.
Cthulhu's a great song. Absolutely, great song.
I don't think people realize how much bass is at the forefront of that song until you see him play it live. When you see
them
play it live,
a lot going on in that.
Rob is one busy Mexican. Dude, that bass gets a workout, that wah pedal gets a workout. There is no fucking let up.
Hey, for a man like Trujillo's, though, that's...
Trujillo.
He's good. That ain't nothing compared to his Infectious Groove days.
No, Rob could play all that shit, no problem. But just think Cliff writing this back in the day.
Rob probably loves it. He's like, fuck, I get a workout here. Hell yeah.
But when Cliff wrote this back in the day, that was like nothing that was happening at the time.
Oh yeah, no, you didn't hear anybody doing stuff like that. That's why he was such an innovator. They said he was the Jimi Hendrix of bass.
Absolute masterpiece. Guess how many times they played that live?
Uh, 43. 86. 86, wow. Mm-hmm. I thought I was shooting high, too, with 43.
I was thinking, too, I'm like, yeah, it's probably around 50.
Wow. That's cool.
Not bad. Not bad.
I'd like to hear that song, even though I don't know if I'd want one of my slots to be taken up with an instrumental if there was going to be one. You know, it's funny, even though Orion is the song I like more, I do think if there was going to be one live, I'd probably rather hear Cthulhu just to hear and see all the different things that are going on.
Now, an instrumental, I'm okay with them changing it up big time live. James has played it different. Kirk has played it different. Lars plays it completely different every time they play that song.
Right, right. But again, an instrumental.
Rob's kind of in the pocket because you kind of have to be in the zone, but the rest is way over the board.
You know, this would be an interesting in voting for all.
Okay, part two.
Who plays their part more inconsistently, Lars or Kirk?
Are you talking overall or this song?
Just overall in general. Because Kirk changes up a lot of things, so does Lars, but then they also have their moments where they really are focused in on the parts that really matter.
It's funny you bring that up because I could name a lot more Lars shit than you could. You could name a hell of a lot more Kirk shit than I could. Because you and I are so focused on them, like, whoa, where'd that come from? And if you asked the other person, I'd be like, what do you miss there?
We'll save this discussion for another night. We'll let the people think about it for a week.
Okay.
Let the people decide.
Great people, wonderful listeners, they're going to do the right thing. Top secret documents stashed away with the Corvette. Horrid. Horrid. Horrible people.
Do you think we get an instrumental on the new record?
I do.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Do I want one? Negative. This is the last record. This has to be the last record.
I'm hoping we don't get one, and I'm banking that we don't get one. I'm probably going to be wrong, but I'm just going to... I got to go the other way. I can't say yeah, and you say yeah. I'm going to say nah, and you're going to say yeah.
As Jeff would say, do the right thing, Metallica.
Do the right thing, and don't give us a fucking instrumental. Pizzle's over here fucking ripping his hair out, going, shut the fuck up.
Pizzle doesn't like lyrics. He just likes the Dream Theater kind of feel.
I love Dream Theater. One of my favorite bands. Almost at one point overtook Metallica.
This is the last record, though. I want as many lyrics and... I shouldn't say normal songs because I just told you how amazing Cthulhu is in my life. But
right.
Right. You can't. The other part is their instrumentals are so iconic that when Suicide and Redemption came out, great, great instrumental, but doesn't even come close to the other three.
No, it doesn't. That's why
not
they
even
should
close.
Not, they should not do another instrumental.
That's my opinion.
They're not going to be able to top it.
No.
We do need a proper ballad, like an actual ballad, not a Halo on Fire ballad, which kind of ballad, but...
That's the Suicide song. What's the song called again, track four?
They didn't have a proper ballad on...
Oh, sorry. Sleepwalk My Life Away is track four.
I want Unforgiven 2, part 4.
Unforgiven 3, part 9.
Right.
No instrumental, yeah, that's my call.
That's the thing, is Death Magnetic had fucking two ballads on it.
Eh, good point.
It did.
Now when we get to that, you're going to swap Day with Unforgiven 3.
I would, actually. I would.
Three should have been in that four slot.
It should have.
Unforgiven 3.
It felt weird where it was. And it shouldn't have had the piano intro. I think it should have just had
the horn.
The horn into the. It should have just gone right into
that. Set sail to sea, but pulled off course.
And the words forgiven or unforgiven should have been used somewhere a little bit more.
Somewheres before.
Right.
Somewheres.
How many of you guys out here seen Metallica somewheres before, man?
Man. We'll get to that when we talk about the Coffin / Pussy record.
Ride the Lightning, hell of a record, hell of a discussion.
There's a lot to talk about on our favorite record. 8 songs versus 12 last week, still a lot of shit. Next week, another 8 songs, imagine that.
Another 8 songs, we'll see how quickly we get through that one, or if we stall and derail, which we probably will. Who knows, maybe in the future we'll even get our good old pals, the Horseflies, back together to discuss some of this with us, because they got some great minds.
Maybe the Horseflies can join us for the Justice Era.
The Justice record. Area. The Justice Area.
I love it. Area 51.
Right. Justice, Black, 90s era, whatever it is. I'm sure they'll have some great opinions.
I just can't wait till we get to a big old fat motherfucker called The Thing That Should Not Be.
Well, until next week when we talk about that song.
Lots to talk about, kids. Lots to talk about. Don't forget to vote in Voting for All. Polls open early Thursday morning, closing late Thursday night with the results on Friday. Anything else from the Winslow Studios?
No, sir, other than a good old fat motherfucker called the Minnesota Goodbye.
And goodbye.
And goodbye.
And goodbye.
And bye-bye.
The Call of Cthulhu says goodbye, Pizzle.
Ride the Lightning still is the best album cover. And goodbye.
The best record, the best music, the best artwork, the best karate chops. And season 11, episode 4 comes to an end. We'll see you soon.
It's the best.
I need more Trident gum. An hour and 20 minutes with no water. Mark that down. No Sunkist, no Spindrift, no fucking nothing.
Camo Yeti, still got it.
What's that Dazed and Confused quote where he's like, no fucking parties, no fucking hanging, no fucking nothing. O'Banion?
Yeah, O'Banion. All right, we'll see you later.
Check you later.
Bye, Pizzle.
See ya.
Bye.
Middle up your ass.
Bye.
And bye.
And bye.
And see you, bye.
Bye.
Wah!